Well, I count myself lucky to have the opportunity to speak with you this evening. I certainly hope that the things that I've planned will be helpful in some way. The study that I'm planning to share is special to me because I was able to conduct this study with several folks privately. I got a lot of feedback from my mom on this one. She's my oldest and best teacher, and so oldest is in farthest back in my life, not in terms of age, before I get myself in trouble here. And so that was really great. And also, I have been studying through the book of Genesis with Matt Trent, and that's been really wonderful to be able to study through that book, especially the lives of Abraham and Sarah with him. I've also been thinking lately that the Wednesday night sermons that tend to stick with me the most give some simple truths, some simple pieces of encouragement that I can take with me throughout my week. And so that's what I'm going to aim to do this evening, is just to extrapolate a few values from the life of Sarah and her service to God that maybe we can use to be encouraged throughout our week. So I'm actually going to start this just by giving an overview of the life of Sarah, which we find throughout the book of Genesis. So when we pick up learning about Abraham and Sarah, there were very few people who were serving God at that time. This would have been shortly after the great flood. And at this point in their lives, these characters that these people who we came to know as Abraham and Sarah were going by the names Abram and Sarai. They were faithful to the Lord at that time, despite the heathenism in the world around them. And in Genesis 11, God spoke to Abraham and told him to leave his home, a place called Ur, and set out toward a place called Haran. And we know that God was leading Abraham and his family to an eventual settlement in the fertile land of Canaan. This was going to be better for the nation that God would produce through Abraham, and so he was leading him to this better place. After this conversation between God and Abram, God promised three things to Abram and his family in Genesis chapter 12. First, Abram was promised a great nation. Even though Abram and Sarah were becoming advanced in age and would be even older by the time that some of these promises began to come to fruition, God told them that they would have a child who would begin a large group of people that would last for generations. So they were promised a great nation. Secondly, this family was promised a great land. God tells Abraham that his descendants would dwell in a wonderful and prosperous place. And finally, God promised a great king. Abram is assured that his seed will become a blessing to the whole earth in Genesis chapter 12. And of course, this promise referred to the Messiah, Jesus Christ, who would come from Abraham and Sarah's lineage and save the world. Abram delivers this message from God to his wife Sarai and explains that they need to leave their home in Ur. And very impressively to me, the Bible does not record any pushback from Sarai, even though this must have been a jarring revelation. She seems to trust God and trust her husband to know what is best for their family, and she is willing to go along with this journey. Now, due to famine, shortly after the family starts out on their trek, Abram and Sarai make a brief sojourn to Egypt before finally going on their way, following the path that was actually designated by the Lord. Egypt was protected from the harshest effects of the famine because of the fertility of the Nile River. They had a fruitful water supply. During their time in Egypt, Abram was afraid that the Egyptians would lust for Sarai and perhaps even kill him in order to take her for their own. Because Abram was cynical in this way, judging the intentions of this group of people based on fear and superstition, he concocted a plot in which he ended up lying to the Egyptians. He convinced Sarai to lie as well, to say that she was his sister instead of his wife in Genesis 12, verses 11 through 13. As it turned out, this plan kind of backfired. The Pharaoh, the king himself, began to take an interest in Sarai. He pursued her for marriage, following all of the respectful traditions of the Egyptian culture, thereby defying Abraham's stereotypical view of the Egyptians. And Abram really had no way of stopping Pharaoh from marrying Sarai. Their small family clan would not stand up against the might of the king's army. So God intervened. God intervened by putting a plague on Pharaoh's house, and the king, finally realizing the deception of Abram, let Sarai go. Not only did he let Sarai go, but he, in fact, drives out Abram's whole family at the conclusion of the events in Genesis 12, verses 19 through 20. And who can blame him based on the calamity that the lie brought upon those people? Now, Abram and his family are finally turned back toward the promised land of Canaan to find a place to settle. And eventually, they temporarily settle near a place called Bethel, which we learn about in Genesis 13. When they return from Egypt, they actually seem to have done very well for themselves because they are described as being quite wealthy. The abundant wealth and resources were good for this family in many ways, but it was also something that created some problems, created some tensions for them, such as a conflict between Abram and his nephew Lot regarding the space they had available for their enormous flocks of sheep. And so they were kind of fighting over who would get what land and whose sheep could graze where. So although Abram and his nephew eventually resolved that conflict without violence, they did end up splitting up and going their separate ways. So the family was divided over this conflict, and much of that perhaps had to do with the vast amount of resources that they had available to them. So more is not always necessarily better. Sarai witnessed the formation of this family clan and their journey away from Ur. She then endured the crucible of the famine together with the family, and then finally experienced its fragmentation here over this resource conflict. So the family has already gone through quite a bit, even though we're only partway through their story. A short time later, in Genesis chapter 16, Abram and Sarai encounter additional concerns about how God would fulfill his promises. They're starting to wonder, how is God going to bless us with a child that will lead us to having a great nation, and so forth. They were anxious about how they would produce an heir, especially as they got older and older, and it seemed as if Sarai would pass the age of childbearing. And I'm sure that this probably weighed especially on Sarai's heart because she was far past the traditional childbearing age. And so she may have been concerned that she had done something wrong, that she wouldn't be able to help Abram fulfill this promise. Perhaps she thought that she wouldn't be able to play a role in God's plan as she had hoped. So Abram and Sarai started concocting alternative plans because that worked out so well for them in previous installations of the story. They started coming up with other plans. So first, Abram and Sarai tried adopting an heir, but we learn from Genesis 15 and 5 that God did not accept this adopted heir because God wanted a direct descendant of Abram to fulfill the promises. So when that doesn't work out, Sarai eventually suggested that Abraham marry his handmaiden, Hagar, and have children through her. This idea would have probably been a strong fit with the common cultural norms of the day and with the secular laws of the day, which would be evidenced by ancient legal documents such as Hammurabi's Code. The culture in which Sarai and Abram lived probably would have accepted Sarai's idea as a suitable solution to the problem. But the challenge here is that they didn't consult God on what he wanted, and God had other plans for creating that great nation from Abram. Even so, Abram indeed married Hagar, and they had a child together named Ishmael. And this marriage to Hagar caused quite a bit of tension in the household. According to Genesis 16 and verse 4, Hagar began to think that she was superior to Sarai because she could have children and Sarai could not. You can imagine how this would be a painful conflict for Sarai. So Sarai began to regret her plan to help Abraham produce an heir in this particular way, and she brought her concerns to her husband. Abram said that Sarai should settle things with Hagar however she saw fit, and so we learn that Sarai dealt quite harshly with Hagar. We don't know all of the details of what that involved, but apparently it was very severe because we do have information about the consequences. Of course, Sarai must have been in a lot of pain at this time, being over 80 years old and having a young mistress come into the household to be with her husband. The younger woman was rude to Sarah and preyed on her potential insecurities. So it's no wonder that Sarai felt hurt and that she lashed out at Hagar. Hagar eventually ran away from Sarai, and the Lord actually finds Hagar and helps her. Meanwhile, God goes to see Abraham, who was clearly experiencing doubt because he tried to come up with his own plans for fulfilling God's promises. So when God sees Abram, he reminds him of those great promises, even saying that Abram and Sarai would have a child within the coming year. So that tells him two things. First, that Sarai would be the mother of the promised child. He doesn't need any more plans that he's made on his own to try and hurry things along. And secondly, he learns from that that the birth of the child is imminent. They won't have to wait much longer for the fulfillment of that promise. At the end of this conversation in Genesis 17, verses 5 through 15, the Lord changed Abram's name to Abraham and Sarai's name to Sarah as a marker of his intention to fulfill his promises to them. And sure enough, within a year, angels appeared to Abraham and Sarah to announce the impending birth of a son. Of course, Sarah famously laughed when she heard the news. After all, she was well into her 80s when she was told that she would bear a baby, which would be quite unusual and undoubtedly somewhat nerve-wracking. The angels asked Abraham why Sarah laughed and posed the question, "Is anything too hard for the Lord?" in Genesis 18, 13 through 14. Of course, that question is rhetorical. The answer is no, and God proved it. God's promise is fulfilled, and Sarah has a son whom they named Isaac, which is completed in Genesis 21, verses 1 and 2. Now, as Ishmael and Isaac started growing up together, Sarah begins to have fears associated with the children and their inheritance. So now Abraham has two sons, each of which might be thought to have some kind of claim to the inheritance. Most of the secular laws at the time would recognize Ishmael as a legitimate heir to Abraham, which would mean that he had a stake in the inheritance that Sarah felt God had promised to Isaac. She asks Abraham to choose a specific heir, to be explicit with the family about who was going to receive the inheritance, who would lead the family clan after he dies. And to make sure that that decision is firm, she asks Abraham to send Ishmael away. Now, Abraham is very troubled over this dilemma, and he does not want to send away a son. But eventually, after asking God about what to do, he yields to Sarah and expels Hagar and Ishmael from the clan. God does give special protection to Hagar and Ishmael after they leave Abraham, and God also brings about a large nation from Israel in addition to Isaac. But that's sort of a story for another time. So although Sarai knew that the decision about Ishmael would put Abraham in pain, she understood that the only way to have overall peace in the household was to separate the rival mothers and the rival brothers so that they could alleviate that tension. After this major event In the journey of the family, Sarah lived approximately another 30 years after the birth of Isaac and was able to joyously watch the boy grow up. She died at the age of 127 while the family was living in Hebron, which is a considerable distance from their original family home in Ur, according to Genesis 23, verses 1 and 2. Abraham found a place near Hebron to bury Sarah, and his choice to bury her in the land of promise, I certainly believe, was an act of faith, affirming the belief that Sarah and their descendants would inherit and inhabit that land of Canaan. So even though they had not come into formal possession of the land, Abraham buried Sarah there with the trust that that land would belong to their descendants, just as God had promised. So that kind of gives us an overview of what happened in Sarah's life. And I have five very brief points to draw out about Sarah's virtues that we can learn from. Surely she was human and made mistakes, and there are stumbling blocks that she encountered as well. But for the scope and purposes of this sermon, I want to just draw out some virtues that I think can encourage us as we go on in our Christian walks as well. The first simple virtue is that Sarah had a great faith. Sarah did not have a particularly easy life. We learn about a lot of hardship that she endured. She was frequently on the move, even when she was very old, which would have been tough. She had the conflict in her family. Although having children was very important to her, she didn't bear a child until late in life. Being unable to have children was probably very difficult for her, which would have undoubtedly made it easier to handle at home with friends and family. But despite all of these challenges, Sarah still heard the word of the Lord through her husband Abraham, and she decided to leave her family at Ur behind in order to obey God's commands. She decided to be faithful to her husband and to God, even though she was leaving a prosperous city for an unknown place. Sarah's example then reminds Christians to walk by faith and not by sight, as we are also reminded in 2 Corinthians 5 and verse 7. We too should be willing to do the Lord's will, even if we don't know all of the potential outcomes. We have to trust that God is going to take care of us, which we also learn about in Matthew 6 and verse 26. Secondly, and I'm sure we'll see that there's some overlap between these points because similar stories give us some interconnected ideas. But secondly is this point that I've titled Leaving and Cleaving. Even though Sarah was faced with uncertainty when Abraham wanted to leave Ur, she still fulfilled the instructions from Genesis 2:24 that spouses will leave their former families and become one flesh. Sarah was committed to Abraham, and even more importantly, committed to God. She could have stayed in Ur, leaving Abraham to an uncertain fate, but she trusted that God would guide them. So Sarah's wise choice to cleave to Abraham when he followed the Lord's instructions meant that she would grow closer not only to Abraham, but also to God. So like Sarah, I believe that Christians should cling to God and his teachings, turning away from the pleasures of the world and toward the unknown, the unseen, but the eternal. Third, Sarah faced famine with courage. Sarah and Abraham faced a terrible famine shortly after they left Ur. Maybe Sarah had second thoughts about whether the journey to Canaan was a good idea because they encountered this hardship very quickly after they first went out on their journey. We learn from the story of Abraham's nephew, though, that looking back can be a very bad idea. We learn about that in Genesis 19. We should not turn back after we've decided to follow God. Looking longingly toward our previous life is not going to help our faith. It's only going to distract us from our spiritual goals. Sarah learned to accept her circumstances and do the best she could with what she had. She didn't complain to Abraham that they should go back to Ur where they had stability and knew that there was prosperity. And I believe the lesson for Christians here is to accept our life circumstances, which we also learn about in Philippians 4:11, to do so without complaining, which we also learn about in Philippians 2 and verse 14, and believe that God is going to supply our needs. As my mom mentioned to me as we were going through this study, if your circumstances find you in God's will, you will find God in all of your circumstances. And I thought that was a nice reminder. The fourth virtue is that Sarah faced her fears. Although there were sins involved in the lies that Abraham and Sarah told during their time in Egypt, no doubt, Sarah also showed great courage against the Pharaoh. Sarah probably agreed to lie about being Abraham's wife in order to potentially save his life from jealous murderers. She knew this lie may have meant that people would try to marry her and take her away from Abraham, or possibly even assault her or kill her. But she was bravely willing to sacrifice herself to protect the rest of her family. And it's to Abraham's shame that not only did he let Sarah go through with that plan, but that he selfishly suggested it himself. Perhaps Sarah believed that God would protect her from harmful circumstances. Even though the couple did not go about doing their work in Egypt in the most honorable way, I do believe that Sarah still showed the virtuous quality of courage in the face of adversity, and she showed a sacrificial love for Abraham as well. And the final virtue that I wanted to draw out from Sarah's life is an immense trust in the Lord. And I am aware that this has overlap with some of the other virtues, but I thought it merited having its own brief description here. God did indeed rescue Sarah from calamity in Egypt, and he saved her household from many other dangers throughout her life. Sarah may have felt alone or powerless during many of these trials, especially the situation in Egypt, but she trusted that the Lord would help her, and that was enough to see her through those trials. I think that Christians can imitate this trust, and we are given several specific tools for how to do that throughout both the Old and the New Testament. We can accomplish this trust and bolster it by praying to God, such as we learn in Psalms 34:17, by trusting in the Lord, according to Proverbs 3 and verse 5, believing in God and his power to answer prayer, according to Hebrews 11 and 1, and being patient as God responds to those requests, according to Psalm 40 and verse 1. We know that if we trust in the Lord, we are never really alone. We know that God's peace will be with us even during our hardships. So if I had to boil this down to one key lesson from the life of Sarah, I think that would be that trust in the Lord can bring us courage and peace and blessings. That trust is going to take us far as we strive to have a closer walk with God. I appreciate your attention as I've gone through this story from Sarah's life. And of course, as we come to the close of the service, we want to mention that it is our goal to serve God in everything that we do, just like Sarah and Abraham did. And today, we have been given a pattern to follow upon hearing the word of God, to believe those things that we've heard, to repent of our past sins and make changes in our life, to confess that we believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God, and then to be baptized for the remission of sins. And if there's someone who hasn't taken those steps, we would be happy to assist you. Or if there are those who have taken those steps, but maybe your faith has faltered in some way and you would like prayer and encouragement, we'd be happy to help you with that as well. Whatever your needs may be, please come forward and let them be known while we sing this song.